Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 6, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is out having a Labor Day weekend. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, X, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. What's going on with me these days? I am getting better and better in terms of my orthopedic health. I have virtually no back pain and nerve pain. I have paresthesia, so I have reduced sensation on the outer side of my left leg, and that is gradually improving. I'm gradually improving in strength in that leg as well, although it's not 100%. I still have soreness in my right knee as well, and I'm continuing to get care for those things. I think one of the things I did was I got too much care because, as you may know, I have this condition of dysautonomia, this mild dysautonomia, where sometimes I get dizziness and lightheadedness and upset stomach, and I get shakes. I had a really good cranial sacral session last Wednesday, and then the following day I started to not feel well, and I got really shaky, and then I had a headache for the whole day. It felt like a migraine, and I don't think of myself as a person who has migraines, but maybe I do. And one of the things that happens with craniosacral therapy is you're realigning your cerebrospinal fluid, and you're also subtly moving the cranial bones so that they're more in alignment with each other. And so mine were probably out of alignment, and there was some irritation to my autonomic nervous system when my dear practitioner was moving my bones. And so I had a reaction, and I had a reaction that was very similar to the reaction I had after one of my vaccines, where I had to be in bed for the day and I basically had a migraine. I had nausea and light sensitivity and a bad headache. So I had those same symptoms. I also had shaking, which is part of my dysautonomia. And then I had a real bad headache all day Thursday. That Thursday evening abated and I got my appetite back and I was able to eat. And then Friday I felt really good. So I ate a lot, and then this morning my stomach has been off, unfortunately. So it's a little bit up and down. So my orthopedics feel well enough so that I could try to do a short ride, but my autonomics are a little off. And one of the things that happens when you have dysautonomia is sometimes there's something called post-exertional malaise. And malaise just sounds like, I think of the word malaise as being a word that means you don't feel like doing anything, which is true. But the post-exertional malaise isn't just malaise. You have actual symptoms, and they can range anywhere from nausea, even vomiting, running to the bathroom, bad headache, migraines, tremors and shaking, and certainly orthostatic intolerance, heart racing. I had a little bit of a racy heart this morning, which has since abated, so that's good. But my stomach's still off, unfortunately. So I'm going to eat lightly today and take care of myself. And once I'm done making the show, I'll be able to relax for the rest of the weekend. So that's nice. Get some sunshine and fresh air and stuff like that. So that continues to go. And one of the things about me is, in case you hadn't noticed, I'm kind of an anxious person. I'm a little high strung. I tend to worry about things, and I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. Because I have neurological symptoms, one of the things I'm nervous about is, do I have Lyme disease? I did a Western blot, and the Western blot was unrevealing. And I mean, the only place I have a paresthesia is in that spot where I know that I'm injured. The only place I have knee pain is in that one knee. I don't have joint pain anywhere else. The headaches come and go, which could be Lyme disease. But I'm not getting worse in that way. I'm having symptoms that come and go, although Lyme symptoms can come and go, but so can dysautonomia symptoms, and Lyme can cause dysautonomia. So I'm waiting to see how this presents. Meanwhile, I'm taking some supplement. I'm not taking anything that's directly antimicrobial, but I am taking things to help detoxify and support my immune system. Now, I was just reading a quote from my dear colleague, Mariah Hinchy, who is a naturopath over in Hebron, and she specializes in treating Lyme disease. And she emphasizes that in order to completely eradicate Lyme disease from your body, you really need to support the immune system. That Lyme disease can't be completely eradicated by taking antibiotics. That if you support the immune system, that is what's going to completely eradicate the organism. You can't just address the organism. Your immune system, there's a thing called the Lyme Western blot, right? The Lyme Western blot is a series of antibodies. Those antibodies are antibodies that we make to the Lyme spirochete. So that is our immune system actually fighting Lyme disease. So our immune system is capable of eradicating it. But, I mean, it can be helpful to address the organism by taking some antimicrobials, but you also have to make sure that your body is good at detoxifying, that your liver is working the way it's supposed to work, that your kidneys are working the way they're supposed to work, and so are your lymphatics. So if you do things like drink lots of water, if you take herbs that encourage the liver, kidneys, and lymphatics to work well, if you get exercise as tolerated, if you take Epsom salt baths or just bathe in general, and if you sweat, all of those things can help to detoxify you and can encourage those organisms to leave. And that's true of any organism. If you have good digestion, then you're going to encourage a good complement of probiotic, of healthy bacteria living in your digestive system, which also is a grand part of your immune system. So if you do all of those things, you can help to, if you have a tick-borne illness, you can eradicate it. If you're very acute, if you have an erythema migraines rash, which I have not had, and you have very acute symptoms, you know you've been bitten by a tick, and then you immediately feel quite ill after that, then I think it's appropriate to take antibiotics. But if you don't have a clear answer from labs, and you have symptoms that could be a lot of different things, one could argue that you could address those other symptoms that are low grade and coming and going and not necessarily assume that they're Lyme disease. I clearly have autonomic nervous system symptoms. I don't clearly have Lyme disease symptoms. I've had autonomic symptoms since last year, and since the end of 2021, that have come and gone and were doing quite well for a long time until I got this injury. And it's certainly possible that this injury and what has needed to have happened in order to heal this injury is something that my body has to take into account and rebalance. And it is quite possible that it's kicking up my symptoms, that my vagus nerve has to if you're reorienting how my brain is oriented in my head by doing craniosacral therapy, and I already have a sensitive vagus nerve, I certainly could get vagus nerve symptoms from that. When you have a major change to your immune system and your vagus nerve is sensitive, you can have vagal symptoms, which I'm certainly having. And vagus nerve symptoms tend to come and go based on what you're doing, based on how stressed you are, what you have eaten, whether you're resting, and a myriad of other factors. So I'm not all better yet. I'm not back on the bike. I'm very sad. What I've been doing is on Saturdays when my bike club goes on bike rides, I go and drive out and I meet them at their stopping place. So today the bike club went to Stafford Springs and went to the coffee place there. So I just drove up and met them there. And I got to see everybody and that was nice. And then when I drove home, I drove alongside them and passed them. So I got to wave at them as they were riding. And then I wound up going into Willimantic and grabbing, there's a new bubble tea place. So I got a bubble tea and then I drove back. And when I was on my road, I saw them riding back towards the beginning of the ride. So I followed them back to the beginning of the school and I got to see everybody. So that was nice. So one of the things is if you are not able to do what you ordinarily love to do, make a compromise. Find other things that you like to do. Find things to make you happy. And it makes me happy to be outside. It made me happy to see everybody. It made me happy to participate in the way that I could, even if it wasn't on the bike, and see everybody, and everybody's very kind, giving me sympathy and stuff like that. So So that's what's going on with me so far. If you're curious about what a big thing I'm taking right now is I'm taking two herbs called berber and pinella. So berber is a product that's it has some quantiphysical imprints as well as the things that the herb itself actually does. And it is not berberines. It's not related to berberines. I believe it's a rainforest herb. And it helps to stimulate the liver, lymphatics, and the kidneys to release toxins. So I'm taking that. And I'm also taking pinella, which is just a prepared extract with those same imprints of anise. And that's a brain nerve cleanse. So I'm helping to cleanse my brains and nerves. And so I'm taking that, drinking a lot of water. I'm also taking resveratrol. I'm taking collagen that has Chinese skullcap in it. So Chinese skullcap is a great anti-inflammatory, and it also happens to address Lyme. It does do some killing of Lyme disease. The resveratrol, I believe, Japanese knotweed, which is a place where resveratrol can be extracted, definitely can kill Lyme disease. And I'm taking resveratrol, and resveratrol itself probably does some killing as well. So I'm taking a few things that could be killing some Lyme disease. I'm not taking much else than that. I'm not taking an antibiotic right now because I would rather work on detoxification and my immune system. And, you know, if things get very acute and I get very sick, and it's day to day, I can change my mind. I can make different decisions. When I was taking the antibiotics, they just really did a number on my digestive system that was bad enough that it made me not want to take them. So, and I just really want my digestive system to work well. And I know how important it is to have a good complement of good microbiome in order to have a healthy immune system. When Mariah talks about having a healthy immune system, that is one of the places that you want to be functioning well. And it wasn't functioning well with the antibiotics. It was just wiping out my good bacteria. And I had worked so hard for over a year on having good bacteria, you know, eating the right foods and getting the right probiotics on board and taking demulcent herbs to soothe my digestive system. And it just wasn't working. So, all right. So that's what's going on with that. I want to talk about some more supplement stuff, and I wanted to jump into autoimmune conditions a little bit. I had a friend talk to me about having an autoimmune condition, and there are some supplements that can help with autoimmune conditions. So let's talk about a few of those. So what's an autoimmune condition? Autoimmune condition, if you have one, any condition where you're making antibodies, where you're making proteins in your body that are attacking parts of your body. So if you have lupus or Sjogren's syndrome, or if you have Hashimoto's thyroiditis or rheumatoid arthritis, those are all examples of illnesses where your body actually, for whatever reason, makes antibodies to parts of your body. And rheumatoid arthritis, there's a thought that you had an infection at some point that has, and you know, rheumatoid arthritis can start from having a streptococcal infection. So you wind up having a protein in your body that's similar to one of the proteins in the streptococcal antibody, and you make antibodies to the strep, and it also winds up attacking your body. So there's a thought that with that's actually rheumatic disease. Rheumatoid arthritis, there's a thought that there's some kind of bacteria that someone was exposed to, and you have a protein in your body that's similar to that bacteria. You make antibodies to the bacteria, and then it goes after usually your joints. So that's rheumatoid arthritis. When you have a positive ANA, anti-nuclear antibody, it's a screen for lots of different autoimmune conditions, for lupus and Sjogren's and mixed connective tissue disorders. And so it can be a precursor precursor test to any of those other things. Sometimes you'll have a positive ANA and not have a lot of symptoms. Sometimes you'll have a positive ANA and have symptoms and not have antibodies to anything else. But there's a whole series of tests that doctors can do to find out which particular autoimmune disease you have. So the unfortunate thing is that autoimmune diseases are on the rise, and exposures to environmental toxins, infections, increased stress, not eating a good diet, those can all make you more likely to get or autoimmune conditions. If your digestion is not working well and you're absorbing proteins from foods into your bloodstream before they're properly digested, you can make antibodies to those, and that can lead to autoimmune conditions. Autoimmune conditions can have symptoms like lots of joint pain, like if it's Hashimoto's, or Graves' disease, you're making antibodies to your thyroid. You can have antibodies to your intestines. That would be like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. You can have rashes on your skin like psoriasis. So whatever tissue it is, your immune system is overfiring and going after your own tissues. That's the definition of an autoimmune disease. Celiac disease is also an autoimmune disease. It's where you eat gluten and you have proteins in your body that when you eat gluten, you make antibodies to the gluten that also attack proteins in your digestive system. So celiac disease is very specific to gluten. When you stop eating gluten, it's wonderful. The symptoms just go away. And so if you test for tissue transglutaminase and you have positive antibodies to tissue transglutaminase, you stop eating gluten and your tissue transglutaminase antibodies go down and your symptoms generally go away. You just have to not eat gluten. So here's some supplements that can be helpful for autoimmune conditions. The first one is glutathione. It's a very potent antioxidant. It is one of the things that I'm taking. I'm taking a glutathione spray. It helps to bind and eliminate toxins. Your body will produce some glutathione naturally. It helps to put together, you can take vitamin C and N-acetylcysteine and you'll put together glutathione from that. If you have a poor diet, a lot of stress, if you take prescription medications, those can deplete your glutathione, which can increase your inflammatory response. So there are autoimmune conditions like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and rheumatoid arthritis that are often a result of chronic inflammation. And when you don't have enough glutathione, you can't properly detoxify. So you build up storage of toxins in your tissues and the immune system has to work harder and you have more disease symptoms. You know that your mitochondria make energy for your body. So when you have autoimmune conditions, you can have antibodies to the mitochondria. So that's one of the reasons you feel tired if you have an autoimmune condition. So glutathione is a great antioxidant, helps to protect the mitochondria. So it can help to increase your energy. So when you take glutathione, it can help your tissues to recover and balance your immune system. So that's great. Vitamin D, deficiency of vitamin D is really common and it's a real concern. It was all thought of mostly for its role in bone health, but it does really benefit the immune system too. Also the brain, and helps to modulate autoimmune disease. So if you have an autoimmune condition, you want to make sure you're checking your vitamin D levels. You want your vitamin D levels to be between 35 and 45 nanograms per milliliter. It doesn't have to be higher than that. Your body has a cutoff point. To get it much higher than 45, you have to take extra supplements. But a lot of people in this area, because you make vitamin D from the sun, people don't tend to get out in the sun. And we live in Connecticut. So Connecticut is pretty far above the equator. So there's only half the year that the sun even gets high enough so that you can make vitamin D. So most people wind up having to take it, because most people, when I test them, they're below 35 nanograms per milliliter. So I've backed off on treating people with really high doses of vitamin D unless they're super low and they come in the single digits, which means they probably have a genetic problem making it. And if people don't absorb it well, if you give vitamin K2 along with it, they'll tend to absorb it better. I myself take vitamin D with K2. So vitamin D is definitely part of the autoimmune cascade. There's been studies that show that people with autoimmune diseases like lupus and multiple sclerosis have lower vitamin D. So if you give it, it can help to mitigate their condition. And then there's curcumin, good old curcumin. I talk about curcumin every week, and I, of course, am taking curcumin. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory, has an important role in two major inflammatory pathways in autoimmunity. It has a great effect on the immune system. It supports it and regulates the immune cell's response to foreign invaders. And it's helpful. It's been studied to be helpful for rheumatoid arthritis and specifically for nephritis of lupus. So nephritis is an inflammation of the kidneys, the nephrons in the kidneys, which are the the places where you have all of the blood vessels in the kidneys that do filtration. So curcumin is very helpful for calming inflammation there. Curcumin, as I've told you a million times, curcumin is not easily absorbed in the digestive system. So if you want to take, if you take poorly absorbable curcumin, it's good if you have, that's a good thing to take if you have an autoimmune condition in your digestive system or any kind of inflammation in your digestive system, because it'll go right through your digestive system and calm the inflammation where it's touching. If you want it to get into your bloodstream and calm inflammation in general, then you have to take it in a liposomal form, so attached to phosphatidylcholine, or a water dispersible form, or a an amorphous form, and those absorb very well. Also, if it's paired with bioparine, which is an extract of black pepper, it can be absorbed better. And so there are different interleukins that it calms down in the immune system. Good old probiotics, right? They're good for just about everything. As I told you, you need to have a good complement of healthy bacteria in your digestive system to support a healthy immune system. So autoimmune disease can be related to gut health, and the digestive system houses most of your immune system. So if it's out of whack, your immune system is not going to work well. And that's one of the problems with, you have tick-borne illness, you know, they want you to take high doses of antibiotics, and it wrecks your immune system, and you need your immune system to fight the Lyme disease. So that can be, or you know, the tick-borne illness, whatever it is. So so it's a fraught situation. So what you try to do when you're taking an antibiotic is you take a probiotic that it can't kill. That's why you take Saccharomyces boulardii, because Saccharomyces boulardii is a yeast and can't be killed by regular antibacterial antibiotics. But sometimes that's not even enough, because you do still wind up killing your bifidobacteria and your lactobacillus and your strepsiaceae and all your really good bacteria and that you have to rebuild. So you take Sac Boulardii and you just kind of hope while you're taking your antibiotic. And meanwhile, if you try treating Lyme disease with natural medicine, then killing your gut flora is not as much of a problem, and it's a good idea to take probiotics while you're doing that. So taking probiotics when you have an autoimmune condition is a good idea, because your immune system may not be working as well, and if you have the extra probiotics on board, they'll set up in your digestive system and they'll help your immune system. A specific probiotic strains actually reduce inflammation and oxidative stress, and also balance your general immune system. Then there's resveratrol. Resveratrol, I told you, that's one of the things that I'm taking. And it's a great antioxidant. So it's high, it's in red wine, but there's not a lot in red wine. Everybody's like, oh, I'll drink some red wine, I'll get my resveratrol. You're not going to get a whole lot. You're not going to get therapeutic levels of resveratrol from drinking red wine. So if you really, I mean, I don't like to say this necessarily, but if you're going to, if you want to take a therapeutic dose of resveratrol, you probably need to take a resveratrol pill. Then you'll get enough to have that great, that great antioxidant benefit. It's a great anti-inflammatory, great immune modulator, may help to kill tick-borne illness. It helps to balance the immune system. It supports white blood cell activity, and inhibits autoantibody production. So it's one of the things you can take when you have autoimmunity. You'll have less autoimmune antibodies, which is really nice. And it really helps to inhibit inflammatory cytokines. So if you have any kind of inflammation at all, and you're trying to get rid of inflammation, it's a good thing to take. So I find that when my belly is off, it's harder for me to take a lot of supplements. So I have to be more I have to curate my supplements a little bit more. And that's one that I really should take every day. I am a fan of resveratrol for general inflammation. If you have any kind of inflammation at all, especially autoimmunity, it can be really helpful. So there are some supplements for autoimmunity. Let me see if I can think of any others that are not on this list, but Boswellia is one of them. Boswellia is also known as frankincense, and it's a great anti-inflammatory, especially for body aches and joint pain. You can get frankincense essential oil, and you can put it on topically. It can help with joints and body aches and back pain and things like that. And you can take Boswellia internally as well, and it can help with generalized inflammation. Boswellia frankincense. Rosemary, rosmarinic acid, is also a great anti-inflammatory, and it's in a lot of anti-inflammatory compounds. There are products you can get that are focused on NF-kappa beta, moderating that system, and they usually combine rosemary, rosmarinic acid, and boswellia and curcumin to help with the NF-kappa beta system to reduce inflammation there. So you can eat rosemary as an herb, but again, if you're trying to treat autoimmunity, you might wind up having to take herbs and take concentrated forms of herbs to reduce inflammation. So that's another great one. General antioxidants can be helpful. Vitamin C can be helpful. Vitamin C and N-acetylcysteine are both great antioxidants, and together they can help with your production of glutathione, which we talked about before is a great detoxifier and antioxidant. So those can be helpful too. If you're going to take vitamin E is also helpful for creating glutathione. If you take vitamin E, it's best if it has tocotrienols in it, not alpha-tocopherol. And the tocotrienols are wonderful antioxidants as well. And selenium, you want to make sure you're getting adequate selenium. You can eat Brazil nuts. If you have a couple of Brazil nuts a day, you'll get very absorbable selenium in, and you shouldn't sit with a bag of Brazil nuts and eat a lot of them, because you'll get selenium toxicity. So if you're taking selenium, probably shouldn't eat Brazil nuts, and 200 micrograms is plenty. So those are great antioxidants, things you can take if you have autoimmunity. All right, so those are supplements for autoimmune conditions. There's also a diet that you can use if you, there's a lot of things you can do for autoimmunity when you have diet-wise. So there's autoimmune protocol diet plans that you can do. Let me just run through that for you. So when you have a healthy immune system, it produces antibodies that attack foreign or harmful cells. But when you have an autoimmune disorder, the immune system produces antibodies that attack healthy cells and tissues. And you can get joint pain, fatigue, abdominal pain, diarrhea, brain fog, tissue and nerve damage. And some examples we've already mentioned: rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, inflammatory bowel disease. Type 1 diabetes is also an autoimmune condition, and so is psoriasis. And autoimmune diseases are thought to be caused by genetic factors, infections, stress, inflammation, use of medications, and for some people, damage to the gut barrier, which is also known as leaky gut, can trigger the development of autoimmune conditions, possibly. And certain foods are thought to increase your gut's permeability, which means that you're going to absorb parts of your food that you don't want to be absorbing. So when you do an autoimmune paleo diet or autoimmune protocol diet, it focuses on getting rid of those foods and replacing them with health-promoting, nutrient-dense foods that will help heal your gut and help reduce inflammation. So certain things that you might not be eating are gluten, which can cause abnormal immune. So generally, even if you don't have celiac disease, certainly if you have Hashimoto's, because gluten is similar in structure to the protein that thyroid peroxidase attacks in the thyroid. So we tell people who have Hashimoto's thyroiditis not to eat gluten, because, and what we see is that people's thyroid peroxidase antibodies go down when they stop eating gluten. They go down significantly. It's really quite exciting. But generally, we tell people not to eat gluten when they have autoimmune conditions. We often tell them not to eat dairy either, just because dairy's job is to raise your insulin and cause growth. So it's going to raise your insulin like growth factor, which is going to cause more autoimmune symptoms. So dairy is often not a wonderful thing to have either. Sugar is another thing that you wind up not eating, because again, sugar directly will increase your insulin. And remember, we talked about the importance of having a good proportion of healthy bacteria in your digestive system. Well, if you eat a lot of sugar, you're going to increase levels of unfriendly bacteria and also yeast like candida that make compounds that increase inflammation. So having a lot of sugar doesn't do great things for your digestive system. So the autoimmune protocol diet is similar to, it's basically a paleo diet. It's a kind of paleo diet, and it may be seen as a stricter version of it. So in the first phase, you don't eat a lot of different, there's not a lot of variety. So in the first phase of autoimmune paleo, you are avoiding all grains. So you're not eating grains, you're not eating, you know, not even gluten-free ones. No rice, no sorghum, no wheat, no spelt, nothing like that. No legumes, so no beans either, because beans have anti-nutrients in them. You don't eat nuts and seeds either. Again, anti-nutrients, that's why. You avoid nightshade vegetables, which is no fun this time of year because it's the tomato time of year, and the eggplant is, well, lots of produce is growing like crazy right now, but tomato and eggplant especially, and peppers. But you avoid nightshade vegetables in autoimmune paleo. You avoid eggs and dairy also. So eggs are a common intolerance. They may be fine for some people, but they're thought of as a common intolerance, so they're taken out. And we said dairy is completely avoided. And also processed foods. They have you avoid tobacco, alcohol, coffee, even oil. So you don't cook with oil, even olive oil. Any food additives, anything refined or processed. Certain medications like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, because they, even though they suppress certain parts of your inflammatory system, they can upregulate other parts of your inflammatory system. When you take things like curcumin and boswellia, they're pretty even-handed in how they downregulate the inflammation in your digestive system, whereas NSAIDs go after very specific parts of your inflammatory system, which winds upregulating other parts of them. So for example, they'll wind up downregulating light cyclooxygenase, but upregulating lipoxygenase. And curcumin and boswellia will downregulate both of those. So it's safer to take those. And plus, your NSAIDs aren't antioxidants, whereas boswellia and curcumin are. And antioxidants both help to support healthy tissues, protect tissues from being damaged, help to repair tissues that have been damaged, and help with healthy gene expression. So, and NSAIDs don't do that. So that's why we discourage NSAIDs. So the foods that you would eat are going to be fresh, nutrient-dense foods, minimally processed meat, fermented foods, and bone broth. Bone broth is great because it's a very absorbable way to get collagen on board, and collagen will help to rebuild your joints once it's absorbed, and it will help to rebuild your digestive system so that all the things that you want to be absorbing, you can absorb better. So you also want to emphasize improving, in addition to what you eat, you want to improve your lifestyle factors, like reducing your stress, getting more sleep, getting good quality sleep, and increasing your physical activity, getting physical activity as tolerated. If you're in a chronic inflammatory state, getting zero exercise is not a good idea. So like I'm in a somewhat inflammatory state right now, so I'm doing exercise as tolerated. So what that means for me right now is walking. I'm able to walk for pretty much a max of half an hour to 35 minutes. I'm able to swim when I'm feeling well, and if I swim, it's 20 to 30 minutes at a time. And I'm definitely able to do gentle yoga, and gentle yoga I generally do. If it's restorative yoga, you're holding very easy to hold poses while doing deep breathing for 8 minutes or longer, and you're using props and stuff. So that I can do for an hour because you're just lying there. I mean, basically you're in a pose, a very relaxing pose for 8 minutes, and then you go to another pose for 8 minutes, and they're easy poses to do. If I'm doing yin yoga, which is a little more active, only in that the poses are a little more stretchy and challenging, I'm limiting it to as much as 30 to 40 minutes. And most days it's less than that. I'll do about 20 minutes at a time. And I'm certainly doing meditation. So meditation you can do for as long as you like, you know, because you're lying there meditating and doing deep breathing. And deep breathing is one of the greatest ways to lower cortisol. And cortisol increases your inflammation. So anything that gets you to do deep breathing is going to help you with your inflammatory system. So lifestyle changes are part of the autoimmune protocol. And it's not just about the diet. So that's the elimination phase. And the elimination phase of the diet varies basically until you feel better. So if you have a noticeable reduction in your symptoms and you're feeling a lot better, most people wind up maintaining, you know, eating really clean for 30 to 90 days. And, you know, you may notice improvements very quickly, depending on how you've been eating and what you change. The thing is, if you go from eating poorly, like you're having coffee and you're going to the drive-thru and you're getting your muffin or your egg sandwich or whatever, and you suddenly start doing autoimmune paleo, I would do that over a weekend because you're probably going to have a healing reaction. If you're withdrawing from caffeine, you might have headaches from the caffeine withdrawal, and your hormones are going to reset if you suddenly eat a much cleaner diet where you're having a lot less starch and sugar. Your insulin's going to reset and your adrenal hormones are going to reset. So if you go a cold turkey, basically, off of toxic inflammatory foods, it's a good idea to have some time to do that where you can rest and lay around and drink a lot of water. Hey, let's drink some water. Let's do that. And just really take care of yourself. Take Epsom salt baths, whatever it is you need to do. Because it can take time to do that reset. And you can wind up feeling really good when you eat like that, but it might take a little while before you do. So once you have some time that you have been feeling really good, I would give it at least 2 weeks, if not more, that you're like, whoa, I feel so much better. If there are foods that you really miss, you can try to eat some of those foods and see if you feel better. And the thing to do is to try adding one food in at a time that you miss and see what happens. Probably not a good idea to start with gluten or dairy, because gluten and dairy tend to be the most inflammatory foods. Or sugar or something processed. Now, if you do want to eat those things, probably you want to do that in the context of eating a really healthy diet and having a tiny, tiny amount of those foods. Foods to add back in sooner would be things like that are still natural but are not processed. So beans, nuts, and seeds, things like that, and see if nuts and seeds increases your inflammation. And I probably do seeds before I would do nuts, because seeds are smaller. Seeds tend to be a little less inflammatory than nuts, have a little less in the way of anti-nutrients. So when I say seeds, I mean like chia seeds and hemp seeds and flax seeds and pumpkin and sunflower seeds. I try the smaller seeds first and graduate to the sunflower and pumpkin seeds. And if you do okay with those, then you can consider trying nuts. And if you want your nuts to be likely to be less inflammatory, it's probably a good idea to either soak them or sprout them. Sprouted nuts and seeds tend to be less inflammatory because when you sprout and or soak nuts and seeds, you soak out some of the anti-nutrients, and some of the anti-nutrients are consumed when nuts and seeds are sprouted. So those tend to be healthier for you. So if they're well tolerated, if you eat them, you're like, well, all I'm eating is, fruits and vegetables and clean meats. And that's all I've been eating. I'm doing some bone broth and I want to add some sunflower and pumpkin seeds. If you add them back in and you feel great, right on, then, and nothing happens, your symptoms don't come back, then you can tolerate those. So, you do a step-by-step reintroduction protocol. And how you do it is you really, like I said, choose one food to reintroduce. And you want to eat that food a few times a day and then avoid it completely for 5 or 6 days. So it's a very slow reintroduction period, because you want to see, the thing is, if you have an IgG, immune globulin G, response to a food, you won't necessarily react to it right when you ate it. You might react to it days later, or you might have an ongoing reaction for a few days. So that's why you want to eat it for a day, and then get off it and then see how you feel for 5 to 6 days. Don't reintroduce anything until 5 or 6 days later. So you're looking at, you're planning to do that food for a few times in a day. The second step is to eat a little bit, like a teaspoon of the food, and wait 15 minutes to see if you have a reaction. So if you react to the food right away, it's over. And then you have to wait for those symptoms to go away before you try anything else. Obviously, if you experience any symptoms and the test, and you can't, if you 15 minutes after eating the food, you feel sick, not worth eating. If you have no symptoms, you could eat a little bit more, like 1.5 tablespoons of the same food, and monitor how you feel for a few hours. If you get to a point, anytime you eat the food, if you eat a food and you don't feel good, it's probably not a good idea to eat the food, especially if you have an autoimmune disease. If you already have an inflammatory condition, you don't want to make yourself more inflamed. Makes sense, right? Okay. So if over after 2 to 3 hours you have symptoms, again, any symptoms that you have that are new since you started eating the food, whether it's an hour after, 2 to 3 hours after, 15 minutes after, or days after, don't want to eat the food. But if you have no symptoms for 5 to 6 days, you may reincorporate the tested food, but it's very slow. So you have to pick and choose. You probably want to pick and choose the foods that you really want to eat. My sense is that you're going to do better with sprouted nuts and seeds and legumes than you are with gluten and dairy. But if you don't care about nuts and seeds and beans and you care about gluten and dairy, then by all means, try those first. You'll if it's bad for you, you'll probably know pretty quick. So because that's what people, I have so many people who are just basically addicted to cheese and addicted to bread. Who doesn't love bread and cheese? Who doesn't love pizza? Those are delicious things that we like to have. They're very reinforcing and we like to eat them, but they can be a real problem in causing inflammatory conditions. So you don't want to reintroduce foods if you're in a circumstance that tends to increase inflammation. So if you have an acute infection, if you have current symptoms, if you've had a bad night's sleep, if you're feeling unusually stressed, or right after a strenuous workout, those are not good times. Strenuous workouts increase inflammation. One of the things that happens, and inflammation from working out is not necessarily a bad thing. The inflammation that you get when you work out is what causes you to strengthen muscles and build muscles. So you want to have some inflammation. That's why inflammation for people who are very inflamed can be, or working out can be problematic for some people who are inflamed. I know with this autonomic dysfunction, it's a real problem, because if I push myself too hard, the autonomic dysfunction kicks in because I have some inflammation in my vagus nerve, and vagus nerve can't handle it, and I get symptoms. So, and that's very frustrating. It's a big post-COVID thing, whether you've had COVID itself or you have vaccine injury, that you can have these autonomic dysfunction symptoms. So be aware that working out causes inflammation, and after you work out, you need to honor that you have created some inflammation, and it's okay. If you can manage the inflammation from working out, it's worth doing. If you get so much inflammation that it makes you sick, then you worked out too hard, and you shouldn't do that kind of working out. That's why I'm trying to moderate what I'm doing, and I know that I can do a certain amount of walking, a certain amount of swimming, a certain amount of yoga. And those are things that I can handle. And then if I pair those things with rest afterwards, all the better. So if you're getting a workout and you already have an inflammatory condition, it's a good plan to, what, drink lots of water? L'chaim. You drink the water because it enhances detoxification. It helps to increase your blood volume because you just sweat. And all of your organs of detoxification have circulation in them, and they all use water, and the water is part of bile. Water is part of your blood. So water is needed for good functioning of lymphatics and of blood vessels and of kidneys and liver. So you need water for all of those things. So after you work out, it's very important to drink water. It's important if you have any kind of inflammatory condition, guess what? If you drink water, It's really simple. You increase your blood volume, so you're diluting whatever it is that's bothering you in your body. Remember what Walter Crinian, may he rest in peace, said? That, I don't know if he's the first one to say that, but dilution is the solution to pollution, right? So if you have polluted air and you bring in fresh air, you're going to dilute the toxins that are in the air. If you have inflammatory compounds in your body, if you have inflammatory compounds in your digestive system and you drink water, you're going to dilute them. And then they will do less harm to you, and all of your organs of detoxification, kidneys, liver, lymphatics, sweat, are all going to work better. So it's really important. So if you've just worked out, Drinking water is one of the things that you do. Stretching is one of the things that you do. When you stretch, one of the things that happens is if you say you're riding a bike, which is what my preferred exercise is. If you ride a bike, then the muscles are moving in a certain way. I'm pedaling my feet. It's very funny. You can't see it from where you are, but I'm pedaling my feet. Anyway, so you're pedaling your legs, and your legs, your muscles get into a certain conformation in order to execute the movement. So they may not be aligned. When you stretch, and also if you happen to use a foam roller, you realign the muscles, you realign the muscle fibers. When you do that, so if muscles are crossed over and inflamed and not aligned, it's harder for the inflammatory compounds to get out. So if you spend some time stretching and realigning them, then your circulation, your water, your glutathione, whatever it is, can help to get rid of the inflammatory compounds faster, and you're less likely to get delayed onset muscle soreness. Now, you do want to have, there's a certain amount of inflammation that you do want to have, because when you are working out, you're telling your muscles to build themselves so that they can do the activity. And that inflammation that you create when you exercise does cause you to, it causes hyperplasia. Hyperplasia means you increase the number of muscle cells that you have. And so that's when you see a muscle getting bigger, the muscle is getting bigger by increasing the number of cells that are in it. So a muscle gets stronger. When you have more cells, guess what? You have more proprioceptors, so you have better balance, and you have more mitochondria, so you have more energy. So anytime you do exercise, you're increasing the your energy just by getting that exercise. If you have an autoimmune condition, you have to watch and you have to work out at a level that gives you increased circulation, a little bit of inflammation so that you can maintain your fitness, and improve your cardiovascular system as well, without going into excessive inflammation and into symptoms. And that can be challenging when you have an autoimmune condition. Let me tell you, it certainly is. And what I had to do, what I did last year, is I gradually worked into getting back to, because I had to, the first 2 months of 2022, I didn't get on the bike at all. And then I was able, I increased my cardiovascular fitness by walking and dancing and doing yoga. So right now that's been a little harder to do because I'm injured, but I am able to walk, but I'm limited as to how much I could walk. So I'm able to do some other things, and as I increase my cardiovascular fitness, I'll increase my vagus nerve's tolerance to it, because that's what happened last time. I had the dysautonomia last year, and I was able to get out of it by gradually increasing my level of fitness and backing off when I was symptomatic. So that's what you do with anything. If you do a thing and it makes symptoms, back off on the thing, take care of yourself, and try again. So you don't want to introduce foods when you're under any circumstances that you increase your inflammation. It's a good idea to reintroduce foods in a particular order. I alluded to that before. So one of the things, this is suggesting choose dairy products with the lowest lactose concentration. I don't agree with that. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I would think that you want to introduce foods. It depends. If you're lactose intolerant, then yeah, you'd want to do that if you know you're lactose intolerant. But the thing is, things like cheese and Greek yogurt are very high in protein. They're very high in casein and whey. And if you have an autoimmune condition, your antibodies might go after those proteins. And so having more protein, dairy protein, because the dairy protein is what, casein and whey increase insulin. That's what they do. That's their job. And they increase insulin. And that's not a bad thing. That, you know, if you're not getting exercise and you have diabetes and you're consuming a lot of dairy, that's probably not a good idea. But if you're a very fit, healthy person and you're not dairy intolerant and you consume some, say, whey protein or micellar casein protein, those proteins are very absorbable. They will increase your insulin, and the insulin will help to drive those proteins into your muscles. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. So I think, in terms of dairy, I think that it's probably, if you're going to eat dairy, choose the dairy that you miss. And I wouldn't start with ice cream because it's full of sugar. I wouldn't start some because, and for two reasons. One, it's that you're introducing something that's high in protein and lactose, and also and also sugar. So you're actually introducing two foods. Sugar is generally not going to be helpful to you if you have an autoimmune condition. However, if you're in a really healthy place and you've been had no symptoms for a really long time and you're eating lots of food and you go to a wedding, you know, lots of really healthy food and you go to a wedding and you want to have a piece of cake, you might be able to do it. Probably take extra curcumin and boswellia when you do that and then you'd be all right. Maybe. So, all right. So foods that you avoid when you're doing autoimmune paleo or autoimmune protocol. You avoid grains, you avoid rice, oats, barley, rye, wheat, and things derived from them like breakfast cereals, that means oatmeal too, and pasta and bread. You avoid legumes, which are going to be peanuts, peas, lentils, beans, and foods derived from them. So any soy products, so soy milk, and tofu, tempeh, fake meat, and also peanut butter. Nightshade vegetables, which is eggplants, peppers, potatoes, and tomatoes. Tomatillos are a type of tomato. And spices derived from them, like paprika. So any kind of seasoning, cayenne, you would avoid cayenne pepper as well. You avoid eggs as part of this because it's a common intolerance. So you avoid eggs, and that's whole eggs, whites, or foods containing eggs. All dairy, that's cow, goat, sheep, donkey, whatever you're milk that you're consuming and stuff derived from them like butter, ghee, cheese, cream cheese, protein powders like whey or casein, protein powders, that supplements that have dairy in them. I would avoid colostrum as well. And you can get colostrum as a supplement. If you're not intolerant to it, it is a great anti-inflammatory. You avoid nuts and seeds. That's all of them. That's and stuff made from them like almond flour or butter or oils, and you also avoid cocoa and seed-based spices like coriander. That's interesting. Seed-based spices like coriander, cumin, anise, and fennel. That's interesting. And fenugreek, mustard, nutmeg. I didn't think of that. That spices. So if you're going to have spices, you want to have ones that are not from seeds, that they're spices from the leaves. So you could have oregano and rosemary. Italian seasoning is probably fine as long as it has cilantro leaf in it, not coriander seed. So you have to look at it, and you may have to do separate herbs. But go for herbs that are leaves, like dill and fennel leaf and rosemary and oregano and lavender. And I think cumin, I don't think you do cumin because it's made from a seed. You can do stuff from roots. So you can do curcumin, you can do turmeric, and you can do ginger. And you avoid beverages like caffeinated beverages and alcohol, so coffee, and you avoid alcohol too. Alcohol is just very taxing to the liver. You avoid refined processed sugars. That's all of them. Corn syrup, beet sugar, brown rice syrup, cane sugar, barley malt syrup, and that's anything sweet, sodas, candies, frozen desserts, chocolate that have those ingredients in it. And anything fake, artificial sweeteners, trans fats, emulsifiers, food coloring. They even want you to avoid sugar alcohols like mannitol, xylitol, and stevia. Stevia is not a sugar alcohol. It's a leaf. But that's recommended to avoid too. What you do eat is a lot of vegetables, except for the nightshades, and also algae. Fresh fruit variety in moderation. Best is local and organic and in season if possible. You can eat tubers like sweet potatoes, yams, taro, cassava, Jerusalem, or Chinese artichokes. You can eat minimally processed meat, so you're not supposed to eat smoked meats either. But fish, game, seafood, organ meat, poultry, they should be wild, grass-fed, pasture-raised whenever possible. And fermented foods are fine as long as you tolerate them. They need to not be dairy. So you can eat coconut. You can have coconut kefir, pickles, sauerkraut, kombucha, probiotic supplements. Those are fine. You can do minimally processed vegetable oils, avocado, virgin coconut oil and avocado oil are fine, and avocados are fine. Herbs and spices, as long as they're not derived from a seed or a pepper. Vinegars, you can do vinegars, and probably not too sweet. It says balsamic is fine, apple cider and red wine vinegar, as long as they don't have added sugar in them. If you get raw organic apple cider vinegar, you're probably going to be fine, as long as you tolerate them. You can do a little honey and maple syrup in moderation because they have nutrients in them. They're good for your immune system and they have antioxidants in them. And you don't want to overdo them. So like if you're having, if you're having some fruit or if you're having some coconut-based unsweetened yogurt, and you want to put a little teaspoon or less of maple syrup in it, you could do that. You could also do cinnamon because it's a bark. You can do green and black tea. So this doesn't mean no caffeine at all. So if you tolerate it, you can do green and black tea. And you can even do a lot of it as long as you tolerate the caffeine. And then certainly bone broth. And bone broth is better if it's fresh. If you can make it at home, that's better. If you can't make it at home, so purchase it. Not everybody has the, especially if you have a, if you're not well, you don't have the energy to make bone broth, then you could purchase bone broth. And some protocols will further say that you moderate your intake of salt, saturated and omega-6 fats, and even maple and honey. Some people say don't do maple syrup and honey or even coconut. And that depends on the person. Some, depending on the autoimmune protocol, you could do like 10 to 40 grams of fructose a day, which would be one or two portions of fresh fruit. So you're not going to do a ton of fruit. You're always going to want to do more non-starchy vegetables than fruit. And then some protocols suggest moderate your intake of high glycemic fruits. So that's going to be dried fruit and sweet potatoes and plantain because they're a little higher in starch. So that depends on you. If you were eating just a really starchy, sugary diet and then you stop eating all of that and you have a little bit of sweet potato with your great big salad, it's probably fine. But it depends. And you want to look at glycemic index foods that are lower than 70. So research on it is limited, but people tend to feel much better when they go on it. And when your gut has less permeability, it's going to be healthier because you're not going to be absorbing things that you're not supposed to absorb. And the thinking is that it's healing your leaky gut, so you're going to have reduced inflammation. It's also just possible that you're eating foods that are inflammatory, and when you take them out, you just lower your body burden of inflammation, whether or not you actually have leaky gut. This protocol has been tested in a small amount of people. If you do this, if you're eating a very processed diet and then you start eating a really healthy diet, you're going to be better. There was a study on women with Hashimoto's, which is autoimmune thyroiditis that tends to cause hypothyroidism, that they saw a high percentage of decrease in disease-related symptoms. So there's not a lot of studies, but it's very simple because it really does make sense to do this. So the downsides make it is restrictive. It can be hard to do. And, when I'm talking with my patients, I have to talk to them about what they are willing and able to do. But so you do your best. You can't do any better than your best. And you do as best as you can. And if most of the time you're eating whole unprocessed foods, you're going to feel better in general. And then you have to be careful with the reintroduction phase. So the reason if you do have an autoimmune disease, it's probably worth a try. It's definitely a good idea to eat whole unprocessed foods if you have any kind of inflammation. Well, gosh, that's all I have time for today. Next week, we're going to talk about a little bit more about some nice things, some lifestyle things that reduce inflammation. Then we'll get into some herbs for Lyme disease next week. Coming up, we're going to talk about the weight loss drugs that everybody is talking about and some information about weight loss. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.